June DeYoung, the psychic, joins me next hour in this split show. When we come back with James Norman, however, we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Coast to Coast, James Norman with us here. James, let me ask you this. The Maliki government is out. Did we do that?
One way or another, I think we were happy to see him go. I think we set up the conditions that caused him to depart. Yeah, I think it's just a combination of pressures.
Why did he stop playing ball with us? Well, I mean, we're the ones that got him instilled in there in the first place. Same thing with Karzai in Afghanistan. Why did they change on us?
Well, I think they see greener pastures. I think the Chinese were all over the place trying to sweet-talk him. Plus, there's that whole Sunni-Shiite thing in Iraq that brought the Iranians into play in a big way there. So it was, to me, it's all very confusing. I just think the U.S. is just not great at nation building, and we're great at taking over countries, but running them afterwards, we're terrible.
We're a mess. Yeah, we're doing an F in that. We're doing an A in getting in there and taking them over.
Yeah, the same thing in Libya. I mean, it's just another cratered landscape. It's just everywhere we go, it's a mess. But we don't care.
Well, you know what? I think that we're beginning to realize you can't occupy these countries. I mean, eventually, they're going to fight back. They're here's the other thing with like ISIS. Who's arming these people, James?
Well, I broke out laughing when I saw a picture of their military convoy. They were driving somewhere. A long line of all brand new Toyota pickup trucks, all the same color.
Humvees, everything.
Yeah. I mean, I should drive something that good. It's amazing. So.
Well, but somebody's buying them weapons.
Yeah. No, I think this is what I'm saying. The Saudis are definitely the key point men on this thing. Now, there's a lot of people have tried to point the finger at the U.S., the CIA, or whatever. There's no really good evidence of that, except for the fact that the guy running it, this Al-Abadi, I think, what was his name?
What, the ISIS leader?
Yeah, the ISIS leader. He spent 5 years in a U.S. detention facility, and then we let him go.
We let him go. That's right.
So, who knows? But again, to me, the key question is cui bono, who benefits? And we benefit big time from just about all of the stuff that ISIS is doing there. And if they go too far, then they'll get their knuckles wrapped, I bet you.
Yeah. Baghdadi's his last name.
Yeah. But again,
the
Chinese stand to be the big losers here. Now, they have basically tried to stay very calm about this. They haven't evacuated their people yet, like they had to do in Libya. You know, there's a massive evacuation of Chinese people out of Libya before the bombs started to drop there. There's 10,000 or so Chinese working on this handful of big oil fields that they've been working on there in southern Iraq. The fighting hasn't got there yet, but at the rate ISIS is going, it's just a matter of time, I think. So there's more shoes to drop in that whole thing.
All right, let's go to some calls here for you. We'll go to David in Huntley, Montana, to get things started. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Well, I have a couple points here to make.
Sure.
October 2012, the New York Times had an article that said the U.S. was supplying weapons to Syrian rebels and that they believed that the jihadists were benefiting. On December 9th, 2012, there was an article at an outfit called Business Insider that said the Obama administration was admitting to selling heavy weapons from Libya to the Syrian rebels illegally. Then, about a month ago, Obama said that he couldn't supply weapons to the Kurds, and then 2 weeks later, they did an about-face saying they would supply the Kurds if Iraq gave permission. And then my fourth point is there's a man from Texas that was elected. He was a immigrant from Syria who moved to Texas, became a U.S. citizen, and he was elected head of the interim government in exile in Lebanon for Syria. And he's married to a teacher in Texas with four kids. And that was on March 18th, 2013.
Hmm.
Yeah. Right.
So nobody's holding this president or our government to account for any of the things that they're doing. And it's nuts.
Well, what I think that says is that, in fact, our government, the permanent government, the national security establishment, is all over this thing. They have been from the get-go, arming whoever we could to go beat up on Assad. And in many cases, I think they were using weapons that were left over or gathered up from Libya afterwards. That's what that whole Benghazi thing was about. That's why our ambassador to Libya was in Benghazi that night, because there was a covert arms trade deal going on there through the Turks, I believe. And that's why the U.S. government has kind of tied itself in pretzel knots trying to disguise what the real issues were in the Benghazi thing. We are the world's biggest marketer of illicit arms. It's just a fact. And when they get into Syria, there's various groups there. Some of the arguments I've seen is that with the moderates, supposedly, we tried to arm, those guys were discredited because of their U.S. connections, and so they're really tough fighters. They went off and joined ISIS instead, took the weapons with them. I don't know. But the net effect still works out the way we want it. Is basically, Assad is under pressure. Baghdad is under pressure. The Chinese are going to be under pressure. The Turks and the Saudis are sitting back smiling at this.
Do you think the CIA, for example, will go to ISIS and say, look, we're going to arm you, we're going to help you finance, but we want you to know that every once in a while it's going to look like we're against you because there's going to be a bomb raid here or there, but we need to do that to show face? Do you think
absolutely.
They actually tell them? Yeah. You think they tell them that?
Well, I'm sure they understand that. Yeah, that, you know, we can't look too buddy-buddy. It's like the U.S.-Saudi relationship. It's very, very tight, but you'll never have anybody in Washington really say that because it's just not politically correct to do that. Saudis are our most staunch allies when it comes to actually doing what we want them to do. They do it. So, you know,
as a government, yet the princes and everybody else, they continue to fund terror to keep them off their backs.
Yeah, but maybe some of that is what we want them to do as well. I mean, funding ISIS is part of it. You know, the Saudis were the main people who funded the Taliban. I mean, most of that money came through the Saudis. You know, Osama bin Laden. I mean, the Saudis have been.
We funded al-Qaeda when they were the Mujahideen in Afghanistan,
right,
for crying out loud.
Right. So there's nothing new under the sun here. But again, if you're looking at the basic question is, why is all this happening? Go back and look at the oil and who's producing it. And it's this China thing. Believe me, the U.S., the secret of life in general is to always keep your focus on the main thing. What's the main thing? The main thing is China. Those are the guys that we're ultimately going to be eyeball to eyeball with. And so we are making life miserable for them everywhere they go for oil. Iraq, Sudan, Libya. It's a full court press globally, and the Chinese are getting very sick and tired of it. They're mad. There's not much they can do about it. So instead, they go out trying to buy oil wherever they can, and they end up doing terrible deals, overpaying for crummy properties all in the wrong places. They're no further ahead than they were 10 years ago.
Let's go to some more calls. We've got Gail in Springfield, Missouri now. Hi, Gail. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Mr. Nuri. I'd like to ask your guest a question. Not too long ago, Senator John McCain was negotiating to get a bunch of this equipment, this good equipment that we had left behind in Iraq, was trying to get this up to the rebels up in Syria, who turn out to be, as your call answerer told me, it was ISIS, not ISIL. But the president called it ISIL.
Tommy
but
was
anyway,
right.
Anyway, Now, all of a sudden, these people have got all of this equipment. So it looks to me like we've got our fingers in all the pie, and we're just sitting back, you know, and letting everybody do all the dirty work and everything for us. And we're the ones that are going to end up benefiting.
You've
well,
got
we
the
do. That's right.
You've
we
got
we
the
do,
picture.
We hedge our bets, don't we?
Yeah, sure. But but we end up coming out ahead here. I mean, the point is the U.S. is winning a lot more than it's losing in all this. And despite all the political rhetoric to, you know, to beat up on Obama for this or whatever, in fact, this thing is a steamroller that is just moving right along slowly but surely. Same thing in Ukraine. In the Ukraine, you know, the U.S. gets chided for being, you know, too hands-off or not being tough enough with the Russians. In fact, Washington has played its cards very well to bring all of Europe on board with these sanctions. Putin is really in a very poor position here. He has a very weak hand to play. He hasn't played it particularly well, and he's just going to dig himself a deeper hole here. And again, oil is a key factor in that thing. If he invades Ukraine, we will tank the oil price. You heard it here first. That's my prediction.
All right. You got it. You got it. We've got Fred now in Ferndale, Michigan. Fred, go ahead.
Yeah, but Putin has the BRICS bank. They're fighting back economically. They want to bust the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency. Are they going to accomplish this, or is the U.S. going to accomplish getting Putin to go into Ukraine and fight it out?
That's a very good point. Let me just say the BRICS, that's the Brazil, Russia, India, China, the sort of second tier of emerging countries here. The London Telegraph had an interesting story a couple of weeks ago by Ambrose Evans Pritchard that looked at exactly this point. Will the BRICS support Russia? His conclusion is no way, because they see Russia is a wounded animal here. And what's going to happen is that Russia is going to end up basically becoming a slave state to the Chinese. Putin is having to sell his soul to the Chinese in order to wage this stupid war against the West, which he can't win, but he's going to end up basically mortgaging all of his prospects for the future to the Chinese, who are his real big threat down the road, and they're not giving him an inch, really. I mean, Putin is in a very difficult position. Now, let me just mention this thing about reserve currency status for the U.S. government, the U.S. dollar. Truth be told, the United States would probably rather not be the world's reserve currency. Why is that? Because whoever is the world's reserve currency, their currency gets pushed up and up and up, and we become a patsy for everybody else who wants to push their currency down so that they can export stuff into our market. And what you see happening here, in addition to this global economic war over commodity prices, even more important than that is a global currency war, which is going on. Everybody is trying to drive down their currencies so they can export more stuff and get richer, or at least not get poor. And the United States has joined that march. And the trouble is that we've got deeper pockets than the other guys, and we can play this game better and longer than the other guys, and we can win it, and we probably will. And what you're going to see is you're going to see more currencies traded in bigger volumes, gradually moving up and gaining some par with the U.S. And we'd be happy with that. Well, believe me, we would be happy with that. Our stuff would be much more competitive. And the Chinese actually have gone out of their way to avoid letting their currency become tradable internationally for exactly that reason, because if it were, their currency would be pushed up and up and up, which would make their stuff less competitive. That's already starting to happen. You know, the Chinese currency is gradually rising,
And they're worried it's going to rise some more. So they've been doing what are called bilateral currency swaps with a bunch of other countries to, I think, try and make their currency more available, but not necessarily force up their currency. Is a global currency war. The United States is going to wage it viciously and has been. The reason interest rates are zero in the United States, basically, is because the main way you drive down your currency is to push your interest rates down, 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 because that way people earn less money by owning your currency. And so when the Federal Reserve does all this hand-wringing about, oh, do we raise interest rates or not, it has nothing to do with the unemployment rate or inflation even. They say it does. It doesn't really. The key thing is, where's the U.S. dollar going? And they've got to keep driving down this dollar. That's why I think we're going to be living with very low interest rates for years out
in
the future.
Long time, indeed.
Right, right. Does that answer your question?
Let's go to Rich now in Crest Hill, Illinois, east of the Rockies. Rich, go ahead.
Oh, hi. I was listening on my shortwave radio to the communist propaganda channel out of Radio Havana, Cuba.
Uh-huh.
And they've been claiming for the last couple of weeks that the United States has been forced to sell them oil at $5 a barrel. And it's been supposedly confirmed from a lot of the socialist and communist countries throughout the world.
Selling Cuba? Selling Cuba oil for $5 a barrel?
No, selling China oil. I got the report from Voice of Havana, Cuba on my shortwave.
At $5 a barrel?
Yes, and they've been selling it to the other communist and socialist countries from around the world.
Like you said, it's a propaganda channel. James, no way. Is there?
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's not the case. You just have to consider the source there, Radio Havana. it's interesting, though. I mean, talking about the Caribbean, you know, the Chinese big time went into Venezuela thinking they were going to secure vast oil resources in Venezuela. They advanced the Vens huge amounts of money with the idea they'd get paid back with oil. But then Venezuelan production just fell off a cliff, and the Chinese, they'll never get paid back these loans. I think there's huge amounts of Chinese investment in Venezuela that's just dead money now. They'll never get the money back. So it's, again, everywhere the Chinese go, trouble follows.
All right, James, we're coming back with final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Here's our final segment with James Norman and your final calls as well. So what's your prediction in terms of the price of oil a year from now? About the same?
I think it'll be about the same. I think we're going to keep the pressure up on the Chinese as long as we have to, and we can. But I think that if Putin goes into Ukraine in a serious way, I think that there is the possibility that we could tank the oil price dramatically. In fact, that's what we did in 2008 when he invaded Georgia. At that point, oil had risen to $140 a barrel, and within a matter of a month or so, we brought it down to $40 a barrel. And as a result, Putin withdrew his troops. He held on to some pieces of Georgia, sort of like he's got Ukraine. But Georgia remains a free state now, because oil is so important to the Russians. It's 70% of their export income. It's 50% of the revenues for their government. They die if oil prices tank, and Putin knows that. So one of the first things Obama did when the Ukraine thing flared up back in March was he announced a test sale of oil from our Strategic Petroleum Reserve. It was a drop in a bucket. It was 5 million barrels. But the point was, there was a shot across Putin's bow, basically saying, look, if you screw up here, we're going to tank the oil price on you, and then you will really be hurting. Can I throw in one quick plug for The Oil Card, this book that I wrote?
You sure can.
My publisher, my trusty publisher at Trine Day, Chris Milligan, he's actually offering a deal. We've just got a few copies of the book left, which came out in 2008, but I tell you, the thesis is still solid. Everything we said is coming true. You can go there. It's theoilcard.com, all one word. and he's got a deal there on the website. Grab it.
You know, we have your website linked up for you at Coast to Coast. You're probably getting hundreds of hits as we speak.
Oh, great.
You didn't know that, did you?
It'll be a collector's item, especially after I'm assassinated.
Don't say that. Jeez.
All right.
Stranger things have happened with guests on this show.
Okay.
Don't say that. Well, any parting words you'd like to say if you think this is going to happen to you?
Oh, no, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm a good. Nobody, and I intend to keep it that way.
Let's go to Jack in Park Ridge, Illinois. Jack, you're on with a nobody. Go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Recently, okay. I went to the library, and I typed in, where does oil come from? And a pie chart came up, and most of it comes from Canada. Now, I live near O'Hare Airport, which is now they're constructing the ninth runway, and all these little small airplanes from Canada are flying in and out that hold only 80 people that are replacing the Boeing airplanes, like the 727s that used to hold 125 people or 180 people. And that's why I think that's we need so much gas, because also I heard on the news that most of our import cars now come from Canada. And whatever happened to that highway that was going to go from across the border to border? Can you comment on that, please?
Well, the highway hasn't really gotten going yet at all. But, yeah, we do get a lot of imports from Canada. Canada's doing quite well these days, James.
Yeah, they are. Their currency is strong. They're doing well. They do. They've got lots of oil. But we basically are trying to keep the oil up there by not letting them build that pipeline, XL Express pipeline. Again, I think the reason is if that pipeline got built, there'd be so much oil coming down to the Gulf Coast where the refineries are that it would push down the global oil price. We don't want that. We just as soon let them truck the stuff by rail or however. To avoid messing up the oil price situation. It has nothing to do with environmentalism, I believe, that pipeline issue. It's all about oil pricing.
Okay, let's go to Harry in Port Huron, Michigan. I used to go out there quite a bit. Harry, go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, George. I've got a question for you, Jim. We've talked a lot tonight about world situations and world oil prices. But what about here in our country, $3.50 gasoline? Are we ever going to see gas get back down below $2 and even more than that or cheaper than that? Is there any other alternative that's even cheaper than gas?
Well, the short answer is no and no. I think we're probably going to end up with these prices for a while. This is what's so frustrating to me. I mean, the United States, we're raising our oil production. We've got more of the stuff now than we did 10 years ago, and we're importing less. Our refineries are making money hand over fist because their crude oil costs are low. They should be reducing the price, but they don't. Again, because there's a geopolitical issue, overall prices are pushed up. Not because of supply and demand, but because of the money that we have been able to push into the futures market that keeps the price up. So you're going to end up with $3.50, $4 gas probably for a good long time. It could spike up. I doubt it's going to spike down. Is there an alternative? When you get right down to it, no. I mean, you're just not going to find that much energy packed into that small a volume of stuff that's so easily carried around. I mean, electric cars, way down the road, fuel cell technology. My bet is eventually we're going to be moving toward a situation where we use hydrogen. Hydrogen generated from solar panels, actually. You make the hydrogen, then you put the hydrogen into a fuel cell, and you'd get combined heat and power. And you could actually decouple the whole electrical grid system if you went to more of these kind of systems. They're starting to spring up. They're very expensive. I think they make great sense, and they're more efficient long run than propane, certainly even natural gas and other kind of fuels for stationary applications. For motor vehicles, gasoline's it for as far as the eye can see, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll be enticed with these electric cars and things, but James, you're spot on. I think gasoline's going to be around for a long, long time. And you know what? And they've done a great job cleaning it up, haven't they?
Well, yeah, there's like no sulfur in gasoline or diesel anymore. And you know, the pollutants coming out of the tailpipe of China are so minimal that the cost of that any fractional improvement is so high now that it's just not worth the bother. And frankly, the whole climate change, global warming thing, I think there's a huge propaganda issue there as well. I think, aimed at the Chinese. The Chinese are really the culprits in all of that stuff. U.S. air quality is as good as it's been in hundreds of years, I think. Tree cover in North America is more than it's been since the Pilgrims got here, I think. North America is a sink for carbon dioxide. We absorb more of it than we generate now. So I think there is so much propaganda involved in so much of the environmental movement that you just have to discount large chunks of it. Yeah, there are definitely good things there, but it's used and abused for, again, geopolitical purposes.
All right, let's take several more calls. We've got some time. Nick is in Las Vegas. There you go, Nick. Take it away.
So I wanted to ask your guest if he thought the James Foley video, beheading was possibly fake, just for a prelude for war, or, you know, boots on the ground.
And that's a good question. I have not seen that video. I don't want to look at it, frankly. I've read some commentary suggesting that some forensic experts have looked at it and said that it was doctored some way. I don't know. I mean, in that situation, anything could be happening, and nothing is maybe what it appears to be. But it's tragic. It's just tragic.
No, it sure is. The whole thing is. James, what do you see right now as our most pressing issue with what you do? What do you see out there?
Well, there's always a risk of some miscalculation, some stupid error, you know, like the Russians shooting down that airliner by mistake. I'm sure they didn't mean to do that. But
if it was the Russians,
whoever, it was a huge screw up by somebody. But when you have military forces eyeball to eyeball with each other in Ukraine, in the Middle East, in the South China Sea, things go wrong. People make mistakes. And it would be so much nicer if everybody would just back off. But I don't think that's the way the world's going to work. I think that, you know, we live in an environment where it's just going to be, you know, increased confrontation all over the place, including places like Ferguson, Missouri. You know, it's just
I was out there last week, and it's calmed down. The media kind of inflated it quite a bit. That's another issue all by itself. But this, you know, we've got problems everywhere, James.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next up, Ann is in Kingston, not Jamaica, Canada. Hey, Ann, go ahead.
Hi. I'm just thinking that China, Russia, the American bankers, and Brazil, this is all being staged to keep the gas prices inflated. Hello?
Yeah, we're listening.
Yeah. Okay. And I think Syria and Iran, from what I understand, and Iraq, are not controlled by the bankers. So that can be the real reason why they're being...
Well, maybe so. Hey, Ann, go get that line fixed. It's really crackling. And do you think there's a conspiracy to fix prices, James?
Well, again, I think that the U.S. government, for national security reasons, definitely is supporting oil prices at very high levels. You could call it a conspiracy if you want. Washington would just say, well, it's a necessary evil. But again, in this book that I wrote, there are some turgid pages on how the futures market is used to do this. There's technical stuff, regulatory stuff, of how the government pulled a few fast ones and basically channeled a huge amount of money into this backwater market in oil futures that just blew the market out of proportion, so that oil prices are high and remain very high. And anybody who bets that they're going to go down ends up losing a pile of money. So you just don't bet against the house, and that's what's happened with oil prices. So, yeah, it's rigged.
Derek is in Grand Rapids, first-time caller. Derek, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Big fan of the show, listening every night on the way home from work. And, Jim, I think you're right on with everything you say. And I kind of like to hit on what you're saying. I mean, I think that the American government, there's too many smart people running it to be, to for lack of a better word, to be that stupid. I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I think it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. I think the government knows exactly what they're doing, just like you said, with ISIS, with everything. I think it's a big chess match going on between us and China, and we don't know most of it. They don't want us to know most of it. That's how wars fought, and just because there's not troops on the ground fighting it out right now as far as between us and China, it doesn't mean that there isn't a war going on between us and China. And I just want to bring something up to you. It could be crazy, but I want to know what you think about it. My cousin and I, we were sitting here thinking, we're like, all this stuff going on with Russia, Iraq, Afghanistan, China, it doesn't make sense what America's doing. It doesn't make sense what Obama's doing. But we thought, well, what if you flip it on its head? The greatest generals in history, they won wars with deception. World War II. I mean, without Patton's great idea, I mean, they didn't know where we were coming. We probably wouldn't have won that war without deception. Now, just like they're trying to take away our guns. Well, they launched this whole, oh, they're taking away guns, they're taking away guns. Well, people in America, you tell them you're taking away guns, what do? We buy guns. Gun sales have gone up. We have the largest standing military in the world.
That's right.
Everybody has guns here. What if we're preparing? What if we're preparing? You know, we're preparing ourselves. We're seeming like we're, I guess, disarming. But really, all we did was rearm the American population. I mean, I think there's a lot more going on here that we really don't know.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. That's the best summary I've heard of this whole discussion tonight, is what you just said here. Let me just say, when people criticize my approach to this whole thing, they say, oh, the government couldn't be that smart to rig prices that high for so long. And I say, I just turn it on its head, like you say. I say, look, the government can't be so dumb to sit there and do nothing and keep doing stupid things over and over and to keep the price high and not deal with it. Sure, they know what's going on, and sure, they're lying about it. And, you know, the problem with that way of life is that sooner or later, people just stop believing anything the government says. And that ultimately is going to be a problem, a big problem. I think it's already a problem. People are losing faith in anything any politician or any government official says, and we're more and more suspicious about the government, the permanent government, the national security establishment, the whole anti-terror boogeyman thing that we're confronted with. I think there's a big disconnect now between people and the government that is going to be a big problem down the road.
Maybe sooner than later, too, James.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, people have lost faith. They don't trust. You know what? In many cases, hope is gone. That's why we need to keep battling and getting it back. Let's go to Jeff, British Columbia, Canada. Jeff, let's squeeze you in here. Go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. Norrie and Mr. Norman. Just real quick here. Mr. Norman, have you heard about the Enbridge pipeline that is going to be going from Alberta out to Kitimat through northern British Columbia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? Because I've heard that the idea with that is pretty much to ship our oil to China, who, like you said earlier, is going to pay an outrageously high price for it, which is good for Canadian citizens, but maybe not so good because, what are we doing, throwing a dog a bone? And the second part to that, too, is a lot of the oil companies in Canada are American-owned. We have Shell, we have Exxon, we have
Shell's not American-owned.
American
Shell is owned by the Dutch.
Oh, okay.
We do have a lot of, we have Halliburton, Baker Hughes, all of the American companies. There's a lot of American play in our oil field. So, I mean, I don't understand why we're sending it to China is basically what I'm trying to get at.
And soon you're going to get Jeffrey Burger King. We're on the way.
Right.
James, I'll let you react. We've only got a minute left. Go ahead.
Again, I think the U.S. strategy is make the Chinese pay through the nose wherever they buy their oil. And we don't want to hurt the Canadians, but we'd rather have that oil be hard to get than to make it easy for the Chinese to get it. That pipeline is going to take a long time to build. It's going to be very expensive. The Chinese will end up paying for it one way or another. Chinese have been buying a lot of Canadian oil companies as well. The Canadians rightly give them a very close look, and I don't think the Chinese have gotten any great deals up in Canada with the properties they've bought. So let the Chinese come and bring their money. It tends to be poorly spent, I think.
All right, my friend, and your website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. It's called The Oil Card. James Norman's book is called The Oil Card as well. When I come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we will be talking with the psychic June DeYoung back with us on Coast to Coast. It's been almost 3 years. We shall return.